At long last, Agra's copy of the crowdfunded game Sim Podcast finally arrived. She looked forward to creating a sillier version of her day-to-day life, but still wanted a touch of realism to her imagined world. Building the studio would be easy, but getting everyone's personalities close enough would be a bit of a challenge. Well, Agra felt like she knew Triku the best, and wouldn't need any further insight. And it being Tuesday meant that Matt was not around. So that left the mystery of Chris. Most of the slides were pretty obvious to her, but she honestly wasn't sure how to handle grouchy versus nice. It was definitely one point to either side, but which one? She could have just left it in the middle, but that didn't seem just right. So a little investigation would have to do. After wandering through the studio for half an hour, Agra eventually found Chris in the kitchen, contemplating between two bottles of champagne. "What brings you here, Agra?" Was that a hint of irritation in their voice? Agra thought to herself. Plus one to grouchy. "Well, first I want to ask, what are you doing?" asked the horse. "Full moon's tomorrow, and it's kind of a special occasion to me. Hey, would you like a glass of either of these? Might not get a chance tomorrow." "Ooh, never mind, that's a plus one to nice. Chris almost never does that." "I'll pass, but thanks. Actually, I was wondering, about writing an intro, like for a podcast, for fun. What's your process like?" "Oh, writing an agrocast intro, huh? Well, I kind of think about it for a day or two. Not as good as Matt, so I, like, go with the short and sweet approach. Modesty? That's definitely on the nice side now." Referencing a past intro is kind of cool. Like, it shows that we have a little narrative going on, even if it doesn't make sense in the timeline. But I guess the advice is just to have fun, you know? Sorry that wasn't much help. Agra nodded approvingly. "No, that helped a lot, actually. Thanks." "Hey, no problem." Agra strolled back to her room. Just as she started launching the game, she started reflecting on her adventures of the past. Wait, wasn't Chris usually the one who put her through some of the more stressful scenarios? Their Hotel Dusk intro from 2 months ago. Chris was the one who was more frustrating in that one. You know what? She slid up the scale all the way to grouchy.
Meta as fuck.
Yeah, I wanted to go for a meta as fuck intro, and I hope I somewhat succeeded in the short and sweet approach, too. But in any case, welcome to the AdroCast podcast. I'm your host, Chris, accompanied by Matt. This is the March 2020 episode, and we'll be covering the SimCity series and spinoffs in a bit. So I know March has been pretty hectic for everyone, but we're going to keep this on the positive side. How's things been going on with you, Matt?
Not great, but, you know, I'm not going to dwell on current events, but the pandemic and the economic downturn in Canada has had an effect. So, like I said, let's not dwell on all that stuff right now. I hope anyone that's listening is keeping themselves safe and that their situation turns around. So, moving on from that, because I know everyone's tired of hearing about it at this point. As for what I've been playing, Drakengard 2 I put on the back burner a bit. I am about halfway through. Well, not halfway through. I think it's been a week and a half maybe since I played it, so I think I'm around Chapter 9 of Intense Mode, which I guess is about three quarters of the way through. But Intense Mode, it takes so much damage that it was getting a little bit tedious, so I had to take a step back and a breather from Drakengard 2. But that's a priority at some point. Now that it's the Easter weekend, it's time to play Drakengard 2, I guess.
Oh yeah, that's totally what the season's for. How many endings did you get, by the way?
Two, and that's because, like I said, you have to play through the whole freaking game every time you want to get a new ending, so I don't know why the hell I'm doing it. But I'm doing it. Played some shorter games. I played through Kid Nikki, Radical Ninja. I've played Kid Nikki in the past, and I was going into this thinking it was Kid Cool, which is a momentum-based platformer like Psycho Fox on the Master System, so I was prepared to play through that. Kid Nikki's not the same thing. It's a so-so game, but it has a lot of big, colorful sprites and a lot of character to it. So it was cute. It was all right to play through. It didn't take too long. And I also played through Air Fortress, which is a much more intricate game. I really like Air Fortress. It does get quite challenging towards the end, so just sitting down to get through that was good. It kind of switches between horizontal shmup sections as you approach an Air Fortress, and then it's like a exploration-based game once you're inside the Air Fortress. It's an interesting dynamic, and the game is deceptively good because it looks just like any other like space shooter game on the NES if you look at the box art. So folks out there like play NES games, I've always recommended Air Fortress. I should mention Iceborne briefly, because they've added two new monsters, Furious Rajang and Raging Brachydios. They're not nearly as difficult as I thought they were going to be. They're not to be underestimated, of course, but I think I have an easier time with Furious Rajang than I do with regular Rajang, if that makes any sense, because I think it's just the new moves that Furious Rajang have are decent, but it seems like there's a bit more downtime. You haven't reached Rajang yet in your playthrough of Monster Hunter, but like Rajang has changed from when I fight him in the older games. There's some downtime between moves, and in Iceborne he does not fucking stop. So Furious Rajang was surprisingly alright, and Raging Brachydios is a really cool fight. I've got some stuff I want to play now that I'm going to have some time in April. Bayonetta 2 and Doom Eternal are on the schedule. I'm not sure when I'll get to either one. Probably playing Doom Eternal first, and then a couple of other games coming up. But yeah, that's basically been my consumption for March. How about yourself, Chris?
Well, I guess I might as well overlay it with you. It's been a rough time also here in the States, but again, I hope everyone's healthy and staying safe. So what I've been doing with my free time, so I also got into Iceborne. We're just going to continue that discussion. I finally happened. I know I said I was going to get it way back in September, and I didn't, but the time has come. This was actually even before things started getting hectic. I just decided to start playing Iceborne because that sale happened, and then I was like, oh, at this point, I might as well, right? And then you and my other friends started showing me stuff from the upcoming event with the roses. I'm like, okay, I'm kind of weak for that, so here we go. The jump from high rank to master rank for me, being a bow main, was not pleasant because you don't get many good bow stuff until quite a few monsters in. And especially in terms of armor, you definitely don't get things until, let's say, the halfway point, if I assume that plot boss was the halfway point.
That you're currently at?
The ice one for Iceborne.
Oh, the, yeah, okay, I get what you mean.
I don't know if this is supposed to be a spoiler-free podcast on Monster Hunter, especially since you've talked about it for a few months past me. At this point, I've kept up with my bow meta, for weapon-wise. Armor, I still need to work on that, which is probably why I'm stuck on the current plot boss. I don't know how I feel about Clutch Claw. I guess I'm still back and forth about it. It is a really cool concept for Master Rank.
Yeah, I can see it being a little testy with the bow. Does the bow tenderize on one hit or two?
Two hits.
Yeah,
it's a light weapon, yeah.
The Clutch Claw I've got mixed feelings about. If I'm using the hammer, I'm constantly clutching because it kind of flows into its combo and it gets a little bit of hyper armor. Same with the clutch counter with the lance. But for other weapons, you clutch because you have to tenderize these monsters or else you're not doing very much damage. So Clutch Claw being kind of required. There's some mechanics that kind of require it. Taking a monster's attention with a flinch shot to the face. It seems to rely too heavily on it, and it's alright, but I wouldn't be sad if it's gone in Monster Hunter 6.
Although driving the monster in the well is pretty rewarding.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And it's why Agitator is so strong in Iceborne, because it's easy to get ranks of Agitator now, and monsters will enrage after you wallbang them, so it kind of makes sense to run Agitator now.
They always seem so angry in Master Rank. Actually, they always keep piling onto in Master Rank, too. That's something new and kind of funny and also chaotic at the same time.
You mean as in multiple monsters?
Yeah, multiple monsters usually showing up at the same area, thinking it's fun to party.
Yeah, they do that all quite a bit. And there's several monsters that are considered invaders that you fought. Bamboros, for some reason, considered an invader. It's got no reason to be in the Elder's Recess, but lo and behold, it is.
Oh, but it's so cute, though, Matt.
Yeah. And Ebony Odogaron is an invader.
And I haven't seen that too much outside of Rotten Vale. Oh, if it goes anywhere else.
It's been a thorn in my side the past week, so.
I've seen Tigrex a lot. I'm not a fan of Tigrex, personally.
I like Tigrex, but I mean, again, it might be a different weapon matchup that makes me like these monsters, because I don't have to worry about zoning quite so much, being a blade master, so there is that.
Well, my personal favorite invader, although it is a bit of a nightmare, is Savage Devil Joe.
Yeah. Savage Devil Joe, I think, probably took a lot of people by surprise when it first appeared, because they didn't expect it to have, you know, gone to fucking wrestling school, but it did.
No, I did that event where also Seething Beetlejuice shows up, because I guess Seething Beetlejuice also has a lot of beef with Savage Devil Joe.
Mm-hmm.
That was a pretty fun event, even if it was just also very chaotic, because the two are constantly at turf war with each other.
I like Seething Beetlejuice, but I wish it would invade.
Yeah, I missed Beetlejuice being an invader. That stupid theme, yeah. Whenever it shows up, and roaring, and just being obnoxious. I kind of miss that now.
I think the lore reason is that Beetlejuice was an invader because its habitat in the recess was disrupted, so it was looking for a different habitat. But why can't Seething Beetlejuice be the Beetlejuice that hangs out in the Elder's Recess, and Beetlejuice be an invader? I miss Beetlejuice, and it's a bit more meaningful to lose Beetlejuice than it is to lose Valhazak and to lose Nergigante, the vanilla versions, and to lose Devil Joe, because they've all got great new counterparts. But Beetlejuice has a great new counterpart, but loses what made Beetlejuice notorious in the first place.
Yeah, so going forward with Iceborne, it was explained to me why World has so many reptilian monsters. I still wish we had, like, Narcilla from 4, because I want a cool spider boss to fight. That would just be different. But alas, I guess. Hey, but that Black Dragon's showing up soon, so I'm kind of looking forward to that, even though I'm quite some time away from it.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
I'm definitely looking forward to Rajang. Everyone has been hyping me up about this fight. I'm excited about it. I don't know if it's because Headless Ape was my favorite boss in Sekiro. Does that... I'm just filling a void here.
Maybe you'll absolutely curb stomp Rajang.
Maybe.
You probably have a decent matchup with Bo, but yeah. Rajang's pretty nasty in Iceborne.
Or I'll still just be a puppy.
Yeah, Rajang will wrap your head in his thighs too, but I don't know if it necessarily would like it as much as the Sekiro situation.
Otherwise, yeah, I'll probably just still chip at Iceborne going into April, and I'll have you cover all the hot new monsters coming out, because you'll definitely be ahead of me still. Yeah. I'll catch up one day.
Oh, it's going to be an interesting road if you're taking it to that level. So we'll see.
I don't want
happens.
It. No, Matt, never mind. I take it back. I don't want to go after crowns, please, no.
No, I've been looking at crowns lately, and it's not a exercise I recommend to anyone, but...
Are you going after those endemic life crowns they added now?
Not a chance. No, not a chance. I'd love to get some, but they're too much of a pain in the... You know, it's too much of a bollock to get them, so...
Yeah, and otherwise, Spelunky is still on my agenda. Last month, I defeated Olmec, and I said I was going to get ready to do the real Spelunky. I haven't really played it as much lately because Iceborne happened. What a surprise. But, you know, last time I was keeping at it, I managed to actually get to the City of Gold. I got the Book of the Dead. That new Anubis was quite a surprise for me. But I died against Olmec because, I don't know, I still get shook a little. I don't know how to say it. Olmec's the end boss, so it's hard to really practice Olmec, and I'm just sloppy, I guess. So what can you do? It's just a process for me.
If you're just looking to practice, I guess you could take a tunnel there of us.
Yeah.
Then you're not going to go to hell.
I'm getting there, though. I just kind of messed up last time, almost near the bottom. It was about like 3/4 through that floor, and then I messed up. But I'm getting there. I'm getting pretty good at getting through the black market in One Piece and getting through ice caverns long enough so I can get actually to the temple and all that. So Spelunky is something I'm still chipping away slowly as well. City, as the name suggests, is a city-building simulation series with its first game released in 1989 for the PC. In the main series of SimCity games, the player acts as the quote-unquote mayor and is given tools to build residential, commercial, and industrial zones while taking or not taking into consideration services and utilities for the citizens. One can either develop a city with a sandbox approach or achieve certain goals, such as reach a certain population mark. So we're gonna keep this as a sort of brief description about all the games, which we'll go into further detail in a bit, but we'll just start off with their history with SimCity series in general. So starting with you, Matt, what's your history with SimCity? Or did you start off with a spin-off or some other kind of simulation game?
Well, honestly, I played a bit of SimCity, but I do remember seeing it for sale when I was a kid, but this was that sort of a secondhand store that had also under that management they had stolen GoldenEye from the local game, one of the local rental places, and were selling it.
Okay, when
So
I asked for your history, wow.
we didn't
Okay.
actually end up buying it at the time. So I didn't really play SimCity on the SNES as a kid to any huge degree, just a little bit in the past. I played more SimCity 2000 on a laptop my brother had at university. He had a couple of different games. This is how I was introduced to Warcraft 2 and SimCity 2000. So most of my experience with the SimCity series is with SimCity 2000, which is a lot like SimCity, except with a few extra things you can do, right? So, really, yeah, that's kind of where I started. And I'll talk about the game I played the most, Sim Isle, in a later part of the podcast, but SimCity 2000 was sort of my entry into SimCity.
Yeah, as for myself, I wouldn't say I got into SimCity quite directly as the first, I guess it was a simulation game, was Populous on the Super Nintendo. I rented that at some time. I don't even know what attracted me to Populous. I guess it looked cool. Maybe it was a Nintendo Power or something. But it was sort of like that kind of simulation game, and when I heard SimCity Super Nintendo was kind of the same thing, that's what brought me into it. But much like Populous and SimCity, at my age, I wasn't really smart enough to figure out how to manage a city well enough. So I think I would say when I was a bit older and I got into SimCity 2000 is where I was mostly got into the series, and then I kind of came back to play SimCity Super Nintendo and get a better hold of it. I don't think I ever hit all the population marks or got that cool Mario statue after a while, but it was something I definitely got interested in, and then I'll talk about Sim Tower, which is the game I really got into when we talk about the spin-offs.
Well, SimCity on the SNES is pretty cool with the Nintendo theming involved with it, so I think that's pretty good. I think SimCity on SNES makes it better than SimCity 2000 on SNES, which I didn't really have awareness of until recently, but it looks like SimCity probably got away a little bit better.
we'll go into our more in-depth discussions talking with the main series, SimCity. Matt, do you want to quickly go over the gameplay of the first game, even though I kind of said it in the summary overview?
Oh, well, like you said, you've got sort of either a goal or just a sort of a sandbox mode, depending on how you want to play it. And it's just about planning your city, right? You have to plonk down your power plant, and then you start to zone out the residential, industrial, and commercial zones, and you have to try to take into account the growth of your city, and if you don't want your residential zones too close to your industrial zones as the population begins to grow, because people in SimCity like to complain a lot, and
yeah, you got that right.
They're never happy. The crime was so high in my city, even though I had like 5 police stations, and it never really grew much after that, but it's like, the crime can't be that high, but apparently it was. So yeah, it's all about zoning out your city, leaving space for it to grow, and also making it in a way that the people can thrive and that you can accommodate their requests, as banal as they might be sometimes.
Both of us played a bit of Super Nintendo SimCity recently as a refresher. How did you feel about the game flow of that?
I thought it was pretty good. I don't believe it moves too fast for you to really react, even on the fastest setting. I found myself sometimes pausing the game if I had to make a lot of changes quickly. But I found that depending on where I started with my budget, I was waiting for the money to come in regardless. So, I don't know, I found playing on the fastest speed on SNES to be fairly manageable. Maybe you want to slow it down as your city grows so you can respond to more things as they happen, but I found the flow pretty good, and it's interesting to see your city grow and how you've planned it out, and you can either go just the bog standard squares with the open middle that a lot of people do in this game, or you can try to make your city look nice, or you can, like you said, it's up to you really how you want to do this. You can either go for maximum efficiency, or you can try to design a city you wouldn't mind living in, I guess, and the game accommodates that, and you can play at pretty well your own pace, so I think the flow is pretty on point for SimCity. It's not complex enough yet in the series that you need to keep it moving slow all the time. So I think it works here. And especially on the Super Nintendo, when you can't respond to things as quickly as if you had a mouse and keyboard, right?
I feel like when you start off SimCity, especially when you haven't played in a while and you're playing on the Super Nintendo, it takes some time to get used to the controls and such. So I would say the game went by a little fast in a way in the beginning of the game, even when you're still laying out stuff and people are still complaining already that you don't have enough roads. I'm sorry, mass transit is more important to me, so you're going to have to wait for the roads, buddy. But then once you start getting the hang of it, you have more things built up. Yeah, I think the game kind of hits a good flow pace, so you can kind of keep up with, like, if there's a fire, you can usually attend to it, or as you continue to build more roads and mass transit, more buildings, and so on, and it kind of evens out. I didn't obviously play a full campaign. I tried to aim for sort of a population rank, so I was trying to keep everyone happy and then also keep managing my budget. Managing your budget isn't too bad in SimCity, at least in Super Nintendo SimCity it was. Maybe it's because I'm older and I kind of understand how to manage everything now. But otherwise, yeah, I think supposedly mass transit is more expensive than roads, but I don't know, you get plenty of money otherwise if, I guess, you have enough commercial and industrial stuff running accordingly and have them all set to work together.
So what's the factor? Do you have to have twice as much residential as you do industrial and commercial or something? Or how does that work?
I don't know. I did it kind of evenly, but I feel like it always wanted me to do more commercial stuff.
Okay. Yeah. For my first time trying to build any kind of city in this, I fell into the trap of trying to use as much money as efficiently as possible, so I think I probably grew that city too quickly. And I think there's a lot of lessons that you can learn from stunted playthroughs of SimCity, because I think the manual for it's pretty good, but in the game, Dr. Wright doesn't tell you a shitload.
Well, there's a lot to know about SimCity, so.
Yeah, for sure. Less than, say, another game we'll talk about, but yeah. I think SimCity is a good example of learning through failing and learning through doing. Because when you plan another city, all of a sudden you've got that much more, you know, forethought into how the game works, and it's easier to lay it out in a way that you want it to look, as well as in a way that the game wants it to run, right?
Yeah, admittedly, I didn't spend a lot of time contemplating my city in SimCity for this podcast. So I would say my city was kind of placed together haphazardly, and it wasn't exactly aesthetically the city I wanted to look like. But otherwise, I think I was doing pretty okay. My budget was all right. Everyone was still complaining about pollution for some reason, whatever.
That's the one thing I would splurge on is the nuclear power plant, but I admittedly, I did play with the most allowable money, so.
Yeah.
But crime was the big thing in my city, even though it seemed like a nice place, but.
Does adding more police stations help? Are they still going to complain about that?
Well, I think it's also low-income areas, right? And I didn't have enough like experience with the game to know how to necessarily do some kind of urban renewal on low-income residential areas. But I think that's where crime builds up. But, you know, the map was very red when I was looking at it, and the police departments did deter it, and Dr. Wright told me to build more police departments, but...
Gee, Dr. Wright, why don't you become the mayor of the city?
Well, gee, Dr. Wright, I don't know what totalitarian control you want in this city, but I think there is an agenda in having that many precincts next to each other, but, you know.
Sort of joked about it in the introduction to SimCity, but yeah, I didn't know I had all this power as the mayor of a city. I thought some of this was more federal adjusted, but okay.
For sure.
But in any case, we didn't have a chance to really play PC SimCity, but in terms of Super Nintendo SimCity, how did the UI feel?
Well, like you said, it did take a bit of getting used to, the UI. It's not so bad when you realize you can snap to the buttons on the left, I think it was with select. And there's various ways to move the map around, but I found that just trying to draw roads and place things, getting to the boundary of the map, I don't know if the PC SimCity will move the boundaries with you as you move the mouse without having to drop the menus and drag it like you do on the SNES game. But that was a mild inconvenience, having to constantly readjust the screen, but other than that, it didn't seem too bad. Like I said, you can slow the game down if it's becoming a problem, and if you have a lot of things to attend to at the moment, but the game's not compatible with the SNES mouse, is it?
I think the Super Nintendo mouse thing is because I think SimCity was Super Nintendo was released before that, so they might not have been compatible,
yeah.
But I didn't look into that, so I don't know how factually true that is.
That's probably the case because, yeah, you'd have to see when Mario Paint was announced. This would be one of the games that should have mouse support, though. And I mean, that never stopped Nintendo from releasing a game updated for mouse control. But I guess the Super Nintendo mouse didn't have so much distribution to make it viable, even though Mario Paint was fairly popular.
Yeah, I definitely think for a port for a PC game, reimagining it to fit in the Super Nintendo constraints is actually pretty good. It's just frustrating, of course, when you think, oh, this would have been so much faster with a mouse. You mentioned about the map,
yeah.
That maybe was possible in the PC version.
Or even more accuracy in drawing roads or what have you.
Yeah.
And as people may have guessed, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool console fan, and the SNES is one of my favorite consoles of all time, just because it's what I grew up with. But I think I would have preferred to play SimCity on a computer with a keyboard and the mouse. I think it would have had better fidelity on that platform as well. So, yeah, Super Nintendo is not a bad version, though, by any stretch of the imagination. And it just takes a little getting accustomed to. And learning a couple of the little shortcuts that they do provide for you. So it's not too bad.
And like you mentioned, I do appreciate the little Super Nintendo special features. Dr. Wright is new from Super Nintendo, and then, you know, the Mario statue, and I guess Bowser is one of the natural disasters which can occur.
Yeah.
I don't know what sets that off. I didn't get any disasters because I'm cool. I also didn't play far enough for that to happen.
Right on.
I feel like most disasters happen when you're pretty far along in your city, so if you're still moving on from, like, I think town to city or whatever the process is, then city into metropolis, then eventually you start getting disasters around that area, but I didn't play long enough.
Unless there's scenarios for that, right?
Maybe, yeah. Or unless you can also set them off yourself, not sure.
Yeah, I think you can at some point. I know you can in SimCity 2000. And I know that there's a lot of scenarios in SimCity 2000 where it's like, oh, this real-life city has a lot of nuclear fallout or something, so.
I think this is a scenario just for the first game. I forgot they added in 2000, but it's really weird that you can't have overpasses or underpasses for roads. It's just really on a flat surface, really.
That might have to do with when it was released as well, and they're just, you know, getting a proof of concept out there.
Yeah. Bridges might be weird.
Yeah, and to be as full-featured as they can with the first entry, but like you mentioned, SimCity 2000 has highways, and it has, I think you could do plumbing in it, as well as subways.
Yeah, they keep getting increasingly more in-depth with what you can do in the city. I haven't played past 2000, even though 3000 was really cool, and I kind of haven't played in ages.
Yeah. I mean, my reason for not playing later Sim games was mostly because I didn't have a computer meant for gaming, and that's not really a huge deal with SimCity, I don't think, but I just didn't play games on the computer, right? So that's sort of why I kind of fell off on that, although I wouldn't mind playing some of these games now that I've sort of dipped my toes back into it, because SimCity 3000, like you said, does look good.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same scenario where the reason why I stopped playing them was because I never really had a PC oriented for gaming. I always had the consoles mostly. I'd like to have a PC for gaming, but then I guess that would be more to my backlog. That's a whole other discussion.
Yeah.
We're going to move on from mainline SimCity. We're going to go to the direct SimCity spinoffs. Which ones did we play and which ones do we remember fondly? Matt, we'll start with one of your favorites, at least your favorites when you were younger.
I guess I should start with Sim Isle, since that's the one I play the most. Sim Isle is a game that I got out of the Scholastic book flyer that they gave out during those book fairs that came to your school. So I got Sim Isle from that. It's a little bit different, I guess, in that it's a very heavily scenario-based game. Now, you hire like these environmental agents and have to complete different tasks on the island, and I was looking at some videos of it this week. I didn't necessarily want to go looking for it. It's a lot more complicated than I remember. There's like a lot of variables, but I remember going through all these scenarios as a kid, so I guess I was really into it. You know, sometimes you have to help wildlife, and sometimes you have to stop poachers or get some level of enterprise going on an island, which sometimes involves building or deconstructing lumber mills and worrying about the balance between the pollution output of your industry versus maintaining the rainforest and building hotels and building things on beaches, sending agents to different like markers on the individual island maps to have them do things. And it's like there's a lot to Sim Isle, and I don't know if a lot of people necessarily remember this one, but I do remember it being fairly difficult and fairly involving, but I also remember quite enjoying it and like all of the different metrics and dynamics to it. And in a sense, it's almost like Sim City on a more contained and smaller scale. You're still kind of building and promoting growth on an island, but it's not nearly to the same level as SimCity, of course. But yeah, I do remember it's very heavily scenario-based and probably not for everyone, but I remember it being a lot of fun at the time.
Do you remember if that also had sort of a sandbox mode, or did you try to play the more with a goal orient?
Jeez, I don't really remember. I think some of the scenarios were open enough that I could just do what I want, or I may have just done what I want anyways and see where it went. But basically, with Sim Isle, you select an island from an archipelago, and from there you try to complete a certain objective that particular island outlines for you. I kind of forget that there's a true sandbox in here now.
You should also mention that it was isometric, and that's why you played it.
Well, so was SimCity 2000.
Oh, I guess that's true.
Yeah, it was isometric, and I liked a lot about Sim Isle, and it may have been because I got it from the book fair, but I liked that game. It was quite good.
Well, the focus was on the rainforest, so I think that's a pretty cool aspect of doing something quite different from being in a city, but still doing the same kind of simulation building in a way.
Yeah. It was different. I forgot all about the hiring agents who were like university professors and stuff, and they're probably just members of the Max's team given the honorary degrees, but yeah, it's like, oh geez, this is a lot more involved and cool than I remember. I just remember building lumber mills on this island, but yeah, it was all coming back to me.
Oh, that nostalgia seeping in now, huh?
Yeah, it's good.
So the spin-off from my youth that I got really attached to was Sim Tower, which involved a lot of managing hotel spacing and then office spaces. You could also build a metro at some point if you got a 4-star building. I don't know what really drew me to this in the first place. I guess because I like SimCity, so I thought making a building would be pretty neat. So it's kind of like a microscopic direction for SimCity. I remember when I was a kid, I had a lot of trouble actually figuring out how to make a really good hotel, but when I got a bit older and I came back to it, I could never really get the 5-star, which I would say is the goal of the game, because once you hit 100 floors, which is the maximum, that's pretty much when your hotel is considered the best. Yeah, I think the only farthest I've gotten was probably like 4 stars, but I guess it was really interesting about how to manage, like how to set up all the hotel buildings and all the people would be okay with that, and making sure you got money from the shopping districts, people paying rent or taking care of the elevators. I think something about that in a different scope was really appealing to me. But otherwise, I remember seeing reviews about saying it was pretty slow. I thought it was a pretty good game flow at my age because I was probably still getting a handle of it. If I ever came back to it now, I'd probably agree that it might have been slow because I was looking at gameplay a bit. And I'd still like to go back to it and maybe see if I can ever get that 5-star hotel running. I don't know if there's any mods in a way to make the game flow go faster, especially if you have a better idea of what you're doing and you kind of have a good flow of money coming in, so you don't really need to worry about managing everything at once all the time.
Yeah, is it beneficial for it to go faster though, or?
They probably say it's slow because I think there were moments in the game where you kind of are just sitting around waiting for things to happen. I think it was less chaotic as SimCity. I think it was a lot easier to manage things all together at once, considering the size of the building. And just even if you had multiple floors, like even if you're around 70 floors, it was still pretty easy to manage. So maybe that was the criticism of it, if I look back on it.
Yeah, maybe if you're able to speed things up. But I'd have to stop during an event, right? Or else.
Yeah, I don't really recall any like big disasters for Sim Tower.
No, I've never really seen much of Sim Tower. It sounds interesting. Definitely it's got to be just a hotel, or is it multiple?
I always called it Sim Hotel for some reason, but it's not. There's definitely like floors where you can have just shopping and restaurants and then other stuff that was office spaces. So it was
Yeah,
like a
yeah.
big commercial building essentially, where it had somehow residency as well. I don't think buildings are entirely like that in real life. I mean, I guess they kind of are like that in real life, but I don't expect buildings to have 50 floors of hotel and then another 50 floors of shopping. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you'd have maybe one floor of shopping in a hotel, but
Yeah,
50 floors
yeah.
is a bit excessive.
Reviewing some of the other disasters, I guess you can have. There was a hidden bomb in the building, could potentially happen, but I don't recall that ever happening. Maybe I just never got a cool enough tower and got far enough in the game for, like, SimCity, the disasters to go set off. I don't know if many SimCity games or, like, SimCity spin-offs are built this way that they give you some leeway of building up your city so you get the hang of it before you've got to hustle around taking care of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think that seems to be the case. Some of the games, of course, are kind of throw you right to the wolves, as it were, but for these larger, like, city building especially, or in such microcosms as the tower, you probably have a bit of leeway before that kind of thing starts to happen, especially since you do logistically think there's more that can happen in a bigger tower than a smaller tower, just in terms of, you know, in terms of probability. So it makes sense.
Stuff about Sim Tower. Matt, do you have another game you'd like to talk about?
The other Sim game I played a lot of as a kid, and this is because I had a friend that owned this on the Super Nintendo, and that was Sim Ant. So, I bored it a couple of times, and I played through sort of the campaign of that a few times, and like to mess around with it a lot. And Sim Ant kind of does what it says on the tin. You start an ant colony, and you want to colonize the entire backyard, as well as the house that is on this backyard. And it's an interesting game. It's a bit different than, say, SimCity, because you have a more direct control in that you get to play as certain kinds of ants. You can go out and forage, or you can go out and defend a nest, or you can go out and generate a new nest. And there's a lot that can happen. The dude that is always mowing the lawn, you have to watch out for the lawnmower. You have to watch out for rival colonies of ants and sort of take their territory. You have to watch out for spiders and ant lions, and there's a lot that can happen. Even in terms of constructing your anthill, you can build tributaries so that if it floods, the water will go down a certain way and not actually kill your queen and colony. So there's a lot of thought that still goes into your march of progression throughout the backyard, as well as how you build your hills. But it is it does take a much more direct approach than SimCity, because, as I said, you take control of ants to play as. So it's different, but it's still pretty interesting. Now, whether it holds up or not now, it might be a different story, but I think it was an interesting but maybe unusual subject to go into. But I mean, when you think about it, I guess ants are kind of like a microcosm of a city and its inhabitants, right? So maybe it's not so far-fetched.
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting how with these spin-offs, they go in definitely different directions. Like, Sim Isle was essentially the city, but it's a rainforest instead. And then Tower is a more close-up of a building in a city. And then we go all the way down to ants.
Yeah.
You could argue that all of these are sort of real-time strategy games, but Sim Ant sounds a lot more of a real-time strategy game.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of Pikmin before it was cool. It's sort of a game you gotta play, Sim Ant, because when you talk about it, it's just like, oh yeah, you're an ant colony, and that's the gameplay, but collecting food and bringing it to the nest and, you know, laying newer eggs and expanding and expanding and expanding. Eventually you can expand into the house, I believe, and
oh man, and then you can take over the house?
Yeah, and of course it gets more dangerous the closer you get to human activity, but I mean, dude mows his lawn constantly, so there's always a risk anyways.
Yeah, so we're going in a more microscopic direction, but now we're going to go in a macroscopic direction with another SimCity spinoff, which was Sim Earth. I played a little bit of this on the Super Nintendo, and I only really played the scenario versions, which are kind of like some weird puzzle solving in a way. I know there's a sandbox version, but in terms of the scenario, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. Where it's really interesting where they had those different levers for, or sliders, I should say, for like carbon dioxide in the air, or like, is music going to be one of the things that the civilization focuses on?
Yeah, now Sim Earth is another one I played as a kid, and I remember liking it, but when I was playing it recently, it was sort of like information overload. I think playing with a manual would probably be the best way to play Sim Earth, but
Sim Earth had got a 200-page manual, apparently, on the PC at least. I don't know about the Super Nintendo port.
I know it was that big on the SNES, but I think Sim Earth is, even in its scenarios, I think it's sort of a sandboxy game because you're expected to try to suss out how to direct the development of life and the planet into the direction that they want it to be directed. And even in the more open end modes of it, you can make changes and then you can have new life appear and then just disappear really quick. And I think Sim Earth is a game that maybe it needs a 200-page manual, or maybe it needs more man hours for me to put into it to understand how to direct the flow of life a bit better. Because while I have a grasp of the evolutionary history of, life, it kind of plays out that way in Sim Earth, but you kind of have to try to figure out how the game wants you to portray that, and it's not necessarily going to be as neat and tidy as, well, I guess the evolutionary history of life isn't exactly neat and tidy, but it's not going to play out as what you may have a grasp of Earth history as. However, you can kind of put together how it should proceed, and then it's just a matter of if it's going to work right. And it might be a bit more elegant than that once you get more knowledge on how to play it. But for right now, I'm a little bit lost on how to be really good at Sim Earth.
When I was playing a little bit of it, I definitely felt overwhelmed with it, maybe because I didn't read the 200-page manual. I kind of skimmed on how the game works. And I think it's still pretty neat on how you kind of have this full range on adapting civilization. You can still terraform. Maybe the meteor will strike because you want that to cause evolution to happen and so on. But in terms of scenarios, I mean, yeah, it's puzzle solving, but it's still kind of confusing in how they want you to adjust everything to make things go as the game wants it to go.
I think in that sense, Sim Earth is more make a change and see what happens, and that's sort of the game flow for it. It sort of provides you with a snapshot of how life might develop under these certain circumstances, and it gives you an outlet to sort of experiment with a planet or what have you, and to see what happens and to see what kind of animal life or what have you gains sapience, and to see if a civilization will bloom in the world you've created and if it'll actually last more than a couple of turns. It's a very sandbox approach to it, I believe, and a lot less structured than, say, SimCity, but I think it's good in that sense because, especially back then, experimental games were really good, and Sim Earth is definitely unabashedly experimental because I think experiment is the gameplay loop of Sim Earth. So, in that sense, while I can't really do it justice right now, I think given, availability and time, it's a game I'd probably get quite into.
Compared to all the other games we just mentioned, where they have more of a goal orient in a sense, yeah, I think Sim Earth, I agree with you, that is more sandboxy. They want you to experiment and see if you change the levels a bit, what happens to the planet. And I think that's really cool, especially for the concept-wise and the time it came out. So I think that's just really neat. Would I really get into it now? I don't know. The Super Nintendo version's kind of okay looking. Well, to be fair, the PC version, the original release, is a little clunky for my taste nowadays. TurboGrafx release looks pretty cute, honestly. Although a little bit weird because the Earth talks to you directly.
Yeah, the Earth as Gaia, although I prefer Gaia from EVO Search for Eden, but that's sort of a segue we won't get into.
So the big SimCity spin-off would be The Sims, where you kind of social interact with different characters that you create, and they all have their different personality traits. In later expansions, give them more dynamics with other people, or someone get them a job, so on and so forth. So I really played The Sims 1 and 2, and despite it being so cool and everyone being into it and everyone having a fun story, for whatever reason, I could not get into The Sims. Everyone has some funny story that they want to share about The Sims, and I just don't have anything.
Yeah, I played The Sims. I didn't play The Sims 2, I just played The Sims, and I don't think I really got into the expansions. I may have had one of them, but that's kind of reaching back a bit far now. In terms of funny stories or whatever, I think it comes down to how I played The Sims, and I played it with, like, I will admit this is one of the very few games I've only ever played cheating, and it probably ruined my experience. Well, it definitely ruined my experience with The Sims because the few times I tried to play it legit, it wasn't moving at a pace that I wanted it to. So, like, funny stories, I don't know. I mean, I would always make one of the households just myself and my brothers, and it's like three times my younger brother would request that he would have his own kind of shed or pool house out to the side, but my older brother would invariably get married in these games, and they would always sort of kick him out of his outhouse place and take it over, and it's just kind of funny how that worked out again and again. But I don't know if it's funny stories because some of the more macabre stories I have with The Sims. I wanted to make a haunted house because I got a bunch of like horror themed skins off the internet. And I had everyone in the house, first of all, perish. And I put their gravestones in the walls because I wanted to have ghosts in the house. But all the Draculas and Frankensteins that I put in the house were just crying at the walls. And
Oh
it was just really, really sad. Not to mention kind of disturbed for me to be doing this in general, but it was just kind of macabre.
that's why it's a haunted house, Matt. What did you expect?
It was a haunted house. I want it to be scary, not depressing, but I guess a lot of my stories are kind of weird ones with skins. Like, I got some Soul Calibur skins, and all of a sudden, anytime a male character took a bath, they turned into Valdo and sort of had his emaciated body and red thong. And I was like, this is getting a little bit weird, but roll, because I wanted to have Valdo in the house, but I guess The Sims kind of led me into looking for mods and skin packs because, well, The Sims and at the time Unreal Tournament, both of them, it was kind of my first foray into that aspect of PC gaming and on the internet. So, in a sense, I kind of have to look back and laugh at some of the weird situations I got into in The Sims just by downloading these packs with reckless abandon, just to see what they did and how they changed things. But yeah.
And I'm certainly sure at one point it probably had Zelda's skins on because, of course, everyone put skins on their Sims mod if you wanted to be creative. I didn't want to play it, quote unquote, straightforwardly because I thought that'd be boring. And if I was going to play The Sims, I'd probably play it as Fanfic Simulator, as I joked off podcast.
Yeah.
But even that doesn't really work for me. Something about The Sims just simulating people in some kind of weird real life job, getting a job scenario, just I don't care enough. I'd rather manage a city or a tower, apparently.
I said, I found I got bored with the game quicker, maybe because I was cheating, and I could just build whatever houses I want for these characters and see how their lives played out. And I did like The Sims from what little I played, but I got tired of it really fast. And I think that has to do more with me not really being a big fan of sandbox in general, unless it's a very specific kind. I think The Sims was a good game, and obviously it was quite popular because I think there's four iterations of The Sims and 1,000 expansions for it, but
People still enjoy The Sims in ways, so.
oh yeah. And I think the stories that you have with The Sims, or like really memorable moments, probably happen when you are playing it more realistically, because then you have time to actually grow attached or invested in a character that you're trying to get through life. The stuff that I had happen, it was just stuff that I was experimenting with, and some of it, like I said, was a bit macabre, but I liked what I played, I guess. But The Sims is a game I don't really feel like going back to. Like, whereas now that I've played some SimCity again, there are certain games here that I said, like, we only really had a sampler platter of these games to, for the podcast, just to keep it relatively open and free-flowing, but, you know, I kind of wouldn't mind going back to some of these games now that I've had a taste of them again, or trying some of the more contemporary iterations of them. But for The Sims, I don't have anything particularly against the series, except maybe the onslaught of expansions. But that's sort of a value proposition issue. It's just, I don't feel like going back to it, although I don't really have anything against the gameplay loop of The Sims necessarily. It's just, like you said, not for me when it comes down to it.
I think it's also the more sandbox approach that The Sims has. I don't even know if Sims really has a goal necessarily. I think lots of people play it for the sandbox aspect of it. And like you, I only like sandbox games if they're very specific or something that really draws me in at the moment. Probably why The Sims never really caught on to me. And playing SimCity again, I do have a bit of a nostalgia for it, but The Sims, I have no desire to really go back to it. And I wouldn't say that's because, I don't know, I don't have enough imagination for The Sims or anything, or I can't really come up with a good narrative, because I can definitely come up with a fun narrative for SimCity or something, but The Sims and just the way it works just doesn't kind of click for me.
Yeah.
So we're going to move on to the last game, which may take up the rest of the podcast. I have not played this game, but Matt, you seem to have some experience it. Can you tell me your thoughts on Spore?
Yeah, my notorious thoughts on Spore. I'm going to try to keep it a bit brief. I was thinking about this the other day after reading your cast flow and thinking how thankful I was that I didn't buy No Man's Sky on release, because Spore was basically No Man's Sky a decade earlier, when you think about it. This game was ridiculously hyped up, like super hyped, and people were super excited for it, for Spore. And myself, I mean, I love games like EVO, Search for Eden, Cubivore. It just seemed like it was a perfect game for me, based on my tastes. And I will say, full disclosure, I played a lot of Spore, because in spite of its issues, it was still fun to mess around with the creators in it. They were still quite fun, and it was still interesting to see the game put these creations and creatures in the world around you. Problem with Spore is that none of the modes are very good. I guess that's a big problem. But like the cell stage, you expect to be simple. And the animal stage, it plays like a bad MMORPG. The tribal stage, it's not that great. It plays like a bad RTS. The civilization stage, the city stage, plays like a bad city builder. And the space stage is especially egregious. For Spore, you have all of these planets that you start on and have all this life on them. But then when you get to the space stage, every planet has only 9 species, I think. And it just becomes very, very routine once you get to the space stage. Interact with a new society, and if they're aggressive towards you, either curb stop them or buy them off or whatever the hell you're doing it. And invariably, on your first time in the space stage, you'll run into the Groks, which are kind of like cyborg Ewoks that are the main villainous component to the galaxy, and you can either ally with them, and everyone in the galaxy will hate you, or you can fight them on thousands and thousands of planets and destroy them completely, and will waste your life doing that. Ouch. But it's if you piss off the Groks, they will continually attack you and harry you, and it just becomes aggravating, but you could even deal with that if there was more to do in the space segment of the game. Now, I will say, Spore did have several expansions, including, I think it was called Galactic Adventures, and I think that probably expanded it quite a bit and addressed some of the issues that people had. Now, I didn't play Spore beyond the base game, So I haven't played any of the spin-offs or any of the expansions of it, so I would hope that it developed into a better game. And that's why I'm comparing it to No Man's Sky, which was so incredibly hyped before it was released. And then, like, Spore was incredibly disappointing to a lot of people. Although you still had fans of both of these games, No Man's Sky would eventually continue to update and update and update, and I think people like it quite a bit more now. It doesn't sound like the game I want to play or that I wanted when that was announced. And I think it's the same for Spore. It's got probably got some decent updates, but I was just so over it by the time they started coming out that I didn't want to get into it. But, you know, with Spore, I made creatures, a lot of animals, and so on and so forth. And it's interesting seeing them in the world. And the creature creator is limited in Spore, but it was quite good at the time. It was limited in terms of the parts having a set statistic, so if you wanted a good creature, they often had similar parts, but you could make whatever you wanted, really, out of what they had available and work with or around those limitations. So, like, again, I found the creation aspect of Spore really good, but I really didn't like the gameplay. I know there was, I think, several cut phases in the game. It's just a shame. And I think if they had focused maybe almost exclusively on the animal stage or what have you, it might have been a much better game just because they could have refined it a lot more. I think the tragedy of Spore is just how underwhelming it was when it was released and how the gameplay, it was so-so, and you can almost forgive it because there's five distinct phases, or I think it's five, in Spore. You can almost forgive them being a bit lackluster when you get to the end game and there's, it gets so repetitive and so blasé and so uninteresting, at least in vanilla. It's just a real shame.
I remember the hype about Spore, but because it personally didn't appeal to me, even after all these expansions, I avoided it. But even after all that, Matt, did you have a creature you really liked in the end?
Listen, I mean, I had some creatures that were interesting in terms of being cool designs, or I had creatures that I tried to get through the game with, like, the lowest statistics possible, things like that. And, like everyone else, I also had dick monsters and such. Yeah, I had loads of creatures that were jokes and loads of creatures that were more serious, and it's tough to say which one was the best or which one was the worst, but I had creatures with great arses, I had creatures with big dongs, I had creatures that were vicious predators, I had the whole range of things.
You had some positive things about it in the end.
It's funny, I complain about Spore, but the honest truth about it is that I had a lot of enjoyment out of it because I made a lot of enjoyment out of it. And it's just, it's such a weird situation because it had a lot to offer in spite of being so underwhelming that I can't hate Spore because I have some memories attached to it and I have a lot of interesting creatures that I made, and this is so different and disappointing and sad in one hand, but by the same token, I think anyone that plays a bunch of Spore can attest. There was still a lot to do, just maybe not what you wanted to do. You wanted the actual functions of these things you were building to be a bit better, I think.
The execution wasn't great, but it sounds like the concept was still pretty cool overall.
I think they built a really interesting editor, and then they should have just built one game around it rather than try to build five around it, right?
Went over this already, but to go over final thoughts, after replaying some of the SimCities, did this bring back any appreciation or did we find out it's mostly nostalgia?
No, it definitely brought back some appreciation, because these games, they definitely hold up, a lot of them, at least the ones I played. There's even some I want to try. I want to try with Sim Life, because I was just talking about how I like EVO and such, and it's got a wild-looking creature on the front of Sim Life, so maybe I'll try that one sometime and see how that goes, and so on and so forth. It definitely made me think back on the series and realize, yeah, I guess I sunk some hours in the Sim Isle, and I guess I sunk some hours in the Sim Ant when I had a lend of it and all that good stuff. So, kind of interested in taking a look, at least looking at where SimCity is coming, and maybe Tropico and City Skylines and things like that. Not necessarily to take the time to sit down with them unless I really get struck with that bug, but yeah, I think it's definitely reinvigorated my interest in the Sim games, for sure.
I don't think I would really come back to play SimCity, Super Nintendo, or play any more of that, or go back to 2000. I definitely want to play more of the recent titles, because I want more of the finer details. I think you need to focus more on the economy, on later SimCity titles, at least in City Skylines, which is not exactly SimCity, but close enough. Or stuff like focusing more on how to design mass transit, which is me being about urban planning all the time. In terms of the spin-offs, yeah, like I mentioned, The Sims probably will stay away from, but I'd like to come back to Sim Tower maybe sometime. Maybe I'll actually get that a 5-star hotel now that I have a better understanding of how mechanics work and that I'm older. Of course, it's a matter of how much time I want to dedicate to it, because, you know, SimCity games definitely take up a lot of time and a lot of planning. It's a lot of effort, but I wouldn't say it's mostly not nostalgia. I think I would say, coming back to it, I made me realize I do actually still like these kind of games.
Yeah, I think I've realized I like these games as well. And we talked a little bit about the whole sandbox thing before, and I might have been shying away from these games, you know, after being kind of separated from them by the whole gaming PC thing. And again, most of these games aren't super high intensity, but I just kind of shied away from that. But thinking back on it, I don't like sandbox games that don't have a point, I guess is the way to put it. And like, I would get bored playing an open world game or a sandbox game that I don't have a sense of progression in. There are certain games that when you complete them, it all of a sudden becomes a sandbox and you can do whatever you want and you have all of this firepower at your disposal, or you have all this at your disposal, you can do anything. And I may do that for 20 minutes and then I'm like, okay, there's no point in me just running around invincible or running around with everything at my disposal, because there's no consequence and there's no risk at that point. With something like SimCity, if you keep going, then yes, you have to keep dealing with natural disasters or the crime rate or pollution or what have you. You can continually improve your city and continually improve your plan for it. And eventually I would get tired of that as well. But where there's still consequences and where there's still something to do, some kind of a task to complete, there's always something to do, obviously, in the sandbox game. But I'm kind of goal-oriented, I guess, in that sense, that these days I kind of like to complete something and move on. But tough to explain, because there's certain games that sandbox or no, I'll get hooked into. Obviously, I've been playing Monster Hunter now for a couple of years with no sign of stopping anytime soon. And that's not a sandbox game, obviously, but it's still more time than I generally put into a game. And sometimes things like that strike me. You know, I think with a game like SimCity that's a bit more open-ended and continually has things to do, I'd probably last a bit longer with it. So whether or not I want to invest the time in something like that is another thing, but probably a slippery slope for me.
Of course, you can always create your own goal in a sandbox game, but I definitely say with SimCity, if I was coming from the more sandbox approach, I would end up having the goal, well, I want to make the city as efficiently as possible, my imagined city with everything right aesthetically, and that would be my goal. It doesn't have to be imposed on me, but I also do like playing SimCity where they tell you stuff. Something like that would still appeal to me. I don't know how they do it in later games. I'm sure it's still the same thing where you want to build the city as efficiently as possible. And there's still always the option if you just want to build your city from scratch and see where it goes from there and then cause your own chaos if you wish. I would agree that, yeah, there's a lot of games I also spend a lot of time on for absolutely no reason, even though they're not sandbox games. So there's really not an excuse for SimCity. It's just that, of course, it is a time management game as well, because it is a lot of stuff to do. And in later games, I don't know how efficiently you can speed up things, or if you want to skip ahead, if it's like a slow part and everything is going well, then you're not really doing anything actively. Again, SimCity is still neat, and going back to it, yeah, I still appreciate the games. So SimCity established the city building sim genre, of course, but do we have any other brief thoughts on any other simulation games? That may be a very broad question, but if you want to get out there, Matt, go ahead.
As for a brief thought on other simulation games, I guess it depends on what the simulation is. You can find simulations for pretty well everything, but back in the day, obviously Flight Simulator was a big one, and I played that at another friend's house. I had from my old shareware discs a game called Corncob 3D, which was actually got Flight Simulator as well, and I think for me, with simulator games, it depends on if it's trying to simulate real life, like how close is it? Because I still want to have a bit of video game to the video games I'm playing, because I do real life every day anyways. So I guess the other simulator game I played the most of as a kid was just a game called Wolf, where you play a wolf pack and have cubs and go out and hunt and avoid hunters, and you use your hearing and your smell to kind of give you a an idea of what kind of animal or situation is in what direction on the map, and you build your wolf pack from a group of wolves. I remember the wolf that was named, I think Centurion was a great alpha, and the wolf that was named Hambone was a asshole and would always challenge you for dominance of the pack. So there's like a lot of cool dynamics to that game, and I thought it was a fun game and definitely interesting. So simulator games, yeah, I played a few, and I think this podcast has kind of made me look back on a few that I might want to try again, and it's just there's some fun memories with games like Wolf that, again, there's still a game aspect to it, and maybe now that I'm a grown, you know, I can go for more pure simulator now, but especially back then, I needed at least a little bit of a gamey aspect to it, I guess.
When I first pitched this podcast about we should cover simulation games, I decided that was far too broad, so we narrowed it down to SimCity. The games I was really thinking about talking about, if we had kept a very wide range of topics, would have been, I would have brought back Roller Coaster Tycoon, which I played a lot as a kid. I don't even know what it appealed to me about Roller Coaster Tycoon. I guess I just like making crazy roller coasters, managing a theme park. That was also a game I played with mods, so it's kind of the other same scenario about how I kind of maybe played that game with a little too many mods and got bored with it. And maybe I just wasn't smart enough to figure out how to run a theme park effectively enough normally in a goal-oriented scenario. When I was bringing up this topic also last month, I was totally in a simulation kick for whatever reason. At the time, I was playing around with a neighborhood building simulator. It's like Sim Tower, except not really, because you start building up like energy sources and then, you know, building your apartment complexes and making sure all the residents are happy. So I was really into stuff like that. But there's even like weirder simulations that I was also appealed to. I always want to get into like an economy-based simulator game. I think the Anno series covers that, but I haven't really touched any of that yet. And then there's even stuff that are far more niche, like there's an upcoming game that you are a museum curator, and that's a simulation of that, so that appeals to me. There's definitely a range of simulation games I do like, and in terms of sandboxy ones, it definitely appeals to me for the right reasons. And if that museum one ends up being a little sandboxy, then that's fine with me. That is just weird enough and simulation enough for my alley, so I'm looking into that.
Right on.
SimCity, since we're going back to that, definitely like the more urban planning stuff. That just appeals to me personally for my own reasons.
It's not strictly a simulator game, but I was looking at, it's actually 5 years old now, the game Chroma Squad, which is a Super Sentai-inspired strategy RPG. But
that sounds wild.
But it's under the pretense that it's simulating you recording a episode of a Super Sentai show for every mission. And like the budget and everything. So I was always interested in that game and I always wanted to pick it up. But maybe now I'll have the push to do it.
It's one of those simulation games that kind of appeal to our weird taste. Because that sounds wild and also kind of interesting.
I guess in terms of any kind of final thoughts I have on simulator games, it's a very broad category, and I guess for me, it depends on a number of individual factors per game. So it's kind of hard for me to nail down, like, I like or dislike simulator games, because it depends on the game. It's just too much of a category, and not specific enough for me to, you know, kind of nail it down. But I guess in general, I'm open to simulator games, and there's some that I do quite like.
Listening to our podcast. If you'd like to reach me, I am twitter.com/Karasu, CAWRASU. Matt, where can we reach you?
You can reach me at twitter.com/Metazoic, MATTOZOIC. It's like the Mesozoic era, except the dinosaurs are better. It's just under certain constraints in a very obtuse simulation that you can find me.
And where can you reach our dear horse Aggro? Please don't be upset at me, Aggro.
You can reach Arrow sulking at Arrowcast on Twitter, AGROCAST.
Next month is going to be our Agrocast anniversary. What did we decide to play?
Well, we've decided to play Super Mario RPG, which fits the theme because we both like Mario, and for no other reason.
That's it. There are no bizarre stories behind this choice at all.
Yeah, we'll see if that gets brought up next month then, I guess.
Till then, cheers.
Cheers.